Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Nickel Boys, O Canada, and Queer.
Nickel Boys is a really interesting movie, and I'd really like to start off talking about that today. It already has a pretty good reputation in some circles. It opened the New York Film Festival this year. I used to be a programmer there, and I still have a lot of interest in that event. And it's going to be opening very widely very soon. It's based on a novel by Colson Whitehead, a very important black writer. And it's a good novel, I have to say. And one of the most interesting things about the movie, which was directed by Rommel Ross, who also co-wrote the screenplay, is that it does not take the same sort of direct approach to the material that the novel takes. It makes it into almost an experimental movie, almost an avant-garde movie. The style of it is very, very unusual, and I think very interesting. It doesn't always work 100%, but the point is it takes a very linear, straight-ahead novel and makes treatment very cinematic in unusual ways. And I just found it a fascinating movie, one of the year's very best. So, Nickel Boys is about a young black man, it's sometime back around the 1950s, maybe the 1960s, who is arrested for a crime. In fact, he was just picked up by a hitchhiker who happens, excuse me, by a driver, he's hitchhiking, who is driving a stolen car. And the next thing you know, our main character, Elwood, has been sent off to what used to be called, I guess, a reform school. It's called the Nickel Academy, and that is where the title of the movie comes from. So there he is now. He is incarcerated, and he very soon makes a good friend, another young man, adolescent named Turner, and they undergo various adventures and horrifying experiences, and, you know, some experiences that are not so horrifying, in this penal colony, which is basically what is sort of a prison farm. It appears to be fairly low security, but escaping from there is very, very hard, and if you get caught in any kind of infraction, they take you off to this mysterious building on the grounds of the prison farm, and they put you through horrific ordeals. They basically torture you. So the idea is to not do anything wrong, or at least not get caught doing anything wrong. And at times, Elwood manages to get outside the place. He gets a job which involves delivering things outside Nickel Academy, and has various little kinds of adventures there too. So that's the basic setup of the movie. That is the basic story of the movie. Again, to repeat what I said earlier, because it's really important. The novel tells all this in a pretty straightforward way, but the movie makes it into a very unusual cinematic experience. For example, very often, not throughout the whole movie, but very often, the camera is looking through Elwood's eyes, almost literally, which is to say, we're seeing things from Elwood's point of view. This is something that Hollywood has toyed with from time to time over the years, the idea of having the camera represent the actual eyes of the main character or of a character, and we're always looking through the camera's eyes, or at least from time to time. Alfred Hitchcock has done this for little parts of movies from time to time, and there was a whole film noir back in the 40s called The Lady in the Lake, which the whole movie was filmed with the camera being the main character's eyes. And it's sort of a gimmick, and it often doesn't work. And I don't think it's 100% successful in Nickel Boys, but it's a very interesting technique to use because, again, it gives the movie this very unusual look and feel. We feel we're very close to Elwood at these times. Now, we might not always be clear about exactly what's happening to Elwood because we're looking through his eyes, and we sometimes aren't entirely aware of what's happening to us when we only take in what our own eyes are showing us at the moment. But the movie, again, is not doesn't make this into a fetish. At times, the camera behaves in a more normal way, and we're seeing things. We're seeing Elwood himself, for example, not just if he sees his reflection in a mirror or something. So the camera is very, very often looking through Elwood's eyes, but sometimes it is looking at Elwood. And the camera does other unusual things, and the storyline does unusual things. It jumps around in time, for example. It's a very, very well-acted movie. Ethan Harris is very, very strong as Elwood. It's not a great performance, but he's very believable. He's very, as we say nowadays, relatable. Brandon Wilson is very good as Turner. And there's various other minor characters. Those two really are the main characters, including some of the white people in and around the institution. Nickel Boys is a harrowing story. It's a story of racism as it used to exist a few decades ago. But of course, we still have all too much racism with us nowadays. And it's always good to be reminded, I think, of the roots of today's racism, how it used to be, how things have in some ways let up and moderated, in other ways maybe not so much. I found Nickel Boys a really fascinating cinematic experience. It's a real work of motion picture art. And we don't run across those all together so often these days. And I was grateful to find it here. If you want a good, straightforward telling of this particular story, then read the novel, which is called, by the way, The Nickel Boys. But if you want to see that story and see it in an unusual and very fascinatingly cinematic and unconventional and, I think, refreshing way, then see the movie, Nickel Boys. Very, very good film. And my golly, I think that Ramel Ross is a filmmaker to keep an eye on. Fairly new on the scene, this is a fascinating movie. Next, I'd like to turn to a movie which is also based on a novel. In fact, all three of the movies I'm talking about today are based on novels. And the second one is called O Canada. And it was directed by a filmmaker who's been around for a very long time, Paul Schrader. And it's based on a novel by Russell Banks. I don't think it's Banks' best novel, but it's a very interesting novel written very late in Banks' career. He died not that long ago. Paul Schrader, fortunately, is still with us, and he's made a really interesting adaptation of this very interesting novel. So, O Canada, the novel, by the way, has, I think, a much more interesting title. The novel is called Foregone, but I guess that didn't sound all that commercial, so the title of the movie is O Canada, which does make a lot of sense in the context of the film itself. But the main character is played by Richard Gere, and I have to mention here that Richard Gere has a history with Paul Schrader. Richard Gere started in one of Paul Schrader's most popular early movies, American Gigolo. It's one of the movies that made Richard Gere into a really major, major star. It's one of the movies that made Paul Schrader into a very major filmmaker. So now we have Richard Gere back, but he is a lot older than he was in American Gigolo. And part of the point of this movie is that he is very, very old. Again, the story of the film comes from this novel, and they're roughly the same in most regards. But they very much deal with this very, very old man who, in fact, is not only elderly, but he is dying. He is dying of cancer. So he himself was, through his career, this is the main character of the film I'm talking about now, a documentary filmmaker. And he became very well known in sort of liberal political circles for making documentaries that pushed a liberal point of view. But he is American, but he's been living in Canada for a very, very long time. He lives with his wife, played in the movie by Uma Thurman. And he's dying. And as a dying man, he has agreed that two of his former film students can come and make a documentary about him. So here we have a documentary filmmaker who is allowing a couple of other documentary filmmakers to make a documentary about him. They are played by Michael Imperioli and Victoria Hill. Now, Paul Schrader is very well known in so many of his movies for having characters who are keeping journals, keeping accounts of their lives, keeping diaries, or sometimes confessing to things. That's a theme which has fascinated Schrader, who, by the way, is a very religious filmmaker in various ways, fascinated him throughout his career. So here we have again this elderly filmmaker played by Richard Gere, who is now going to talk to a couple of other filmmakers Lakers and reveal the true story of his life. But we find out fairly early in the film that he's less interested in letting the world know the story of his life than he is interested in letting his wife, played by Uma Thurman, know the story of what really his earlier life was. And he's using this documentary being made about him as a way of revealing these things about himself, not only to the world, but very much to his wife, who is there in the room. And in fact, at various times, if she wants to leave the room, he refuses to continue unless she is there. So this movie is on one level about politics, about his past as a political filmmaker, about why he left the United States during the Vietnam War era to move to Canada in order to get away from America's war, in order to get away from the draft, in order to get away morally from what he regarded as an immoral war. So it's about that, but it's also very much about certain deceptions which he has practiced in his own life. And these things come out vaguely and sometimes specifically over the course of the movie. So what we have here is basically a very long exercise in confession. It's a movie that has a few little sort of movie in-jokes. These documentary filmmakers making the movie about our main character are using a device which is very much like the Interitron invented by the real documentary filmmaker Errol Morris, where you talk into the camera, but you're looking at the person who is interviewing you. And that, again, is a very sort of confessional technique as Schrader sees it. It's a really, really interesting movie. I don't think it 100% works. I don't think it's one of Schrader's greatest movies. His greatest movies, oh, I would say Affliction, also based on a Russell Bank novel, is one of his very greatest movies. This film, Oh Canada, doesn't quite reach that level. But it's a very, very interesting, very intellectually stimulating, very morally stimulating movie, which has to do with history, has to do with memory, and has to do with what it's like to be a very, very old man reaching the end of an illustrious career, but having various secrets, which one would like to now reveal. A very, very interesting, very personal film for Schrader. I am so glad that he is still around making movies. He's pretty old himself now. I hope he has more movies to give us. Oh Canada is a flawed but really, really, really interesting film. Finally, our third movie for today, based on a novel, Queer, based on a novel by the Beat Generation writer William S. Burroughs. Long time since I've read this one. Interesting novel. I think it's not one of Burroughs' very greatest works, but it has been made into a film now by Luca Guadagnino. Very, very interesting filmmaker, who very versatile. Last film, by the way, it was, just came out earlier this year, Challengers, is a sports movie. So now he has made Queer, which is a movie, as the title suggests, very much about homosexuality. And it stars, of all people, because it's a very sort of down and dirty, scruffy sort of a main character, stars Daniel Craig, best known for playing James Bond, of course, but he's played all kinds of other roles too, and I think he's a very gifted actor in all kinds of ways. He plays the main character of Queer, based on William S. Burroughs himself, who wrote this. It's a pretty autobiographical novel in some ways. The main character is named William Lee, but it is basically William S. Burroughs himself. And he is back in the 1950s. He's down in Mexico. He's an expatriate, and he's living down there, and he's spending his time drinking and taking drugs. He's a junkie. Another one of Burroughs' books is entitled Junkie. Taking drugs and picking up men and getting involved just in sort of living the life as a very sort of a scruffy, drug-addicted, heavy drinking homosexual back in the 1950s in Mexico. So that's who our main character is. But fairly early in the film, he gets to know a much younger man, another gay man, named Eugene Allerton, who is played by Drew Starkey. And I think this is a marvelous performance. One reason for watching Queer is to see these two spectacular main performances by Daniel Craig and Drew Starkey. Anyway, they form a very close bond. And yes, okay, they're gay men, and there's a certain amount, this is back in the 50s, certain amount of promiscuity going on and sort of little scruffy adventures, but they do form a real bond. Now, I found a very great deal of the movie Queer beautifully shot, gorgeously directed by Luca Guadagnino, very, very talented director. However, I found it pretty boring, basically. We have the drinking. We have the drug taking. We have the picking up men. We have the going to bed with men. We have this and that. We have the developing of the relationship between William Lee and Eugene Allerton. Okay, it's all pretty standard stuff, and I just didn't find it very interesting. It's great to look at because it's so beautifully photographed, beautifully directed, but pretty dull. Then, fairly late in the movie, I would say around the two-thirds mark, maybe even a little bit later than that, our main characters, both of them, go down to another part of Mexico, and they go into the jungle, and the main character, William Lee, ends up in Ecuador, and there the movie gets really interesting, because in the jungle, they meet a botanist, because they are interested in exploring a kind of drug that they have only heard about, yahe, otherwise known as ayahuasca, and they meet this female physician down there, living in the jungle doing research, and she is able to facilitate their quest to get a hold of some of this drug, and then they start taking the drug, and then the movie turns into sort of a psychedelic horror movie. Now, Luca Guadagnino, the director, is good at horror movies. A few years ago, he made a very good remake of the Italian horror film Suspiria, and I think it's one of his very, very best movies. So when Queer finally, late in the game, turns into a psychedelic horror movie, then I think it becomes visually adventurous, narratively adventurous, and a really fascinating film to watch. So, Queer, my verdict is very mixed. It's a queer film, yes, it's queer in all respects. I think a large part of the way, it's actually sort of dull. But once you get down into the jungle, and once you get the psychedelics going, it becomes cinematically a very, very adventurous movie. All three of today's movies I've talked about are based on novels. All three are cinematically adventurous to one extent or another. Queer is not the best of them, but they're a fascinating triad of movies in this late part of the year. So that is my somewhat based on a novel story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films, Nickel Boys, O Canada, and Queer.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.